And now it's time for Inside Voices with Kevin Causey-Thomas, a local discussion focused on systemic racism, injustice, and hate in our country. Although we may not always agree, the aim of Inside Voices is to confront these truths together by sharing the voices of those facing these struggles and to find a path to making things better. We invite you to listen to this ongoing conversation. And now, here's Kevin.
And welcome everybody to Inside Voices. This is your host, Kevin Causey-Thomas, and you're listening to here right here on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. Just like I do, start always the show by welcoming everybody, black men and women, all people of all races and nationalities, allies in the struggle that are here to continue our conversation about social justice, racism, and all the stuff that we can do to make these things better. And the topics surrounding these issues, in our nation and in our society, in our community. And today is a special episode. I don't have a guest. It's just going to be me and you talking today and the listenership. Everybody tuning in out there, I appreciate y'all continuing to support the show and us having real conversation on a platform like this. But yeah, we're going to definitely talk about the Derek Chauvin verdict in the George Floyd murder case. I try to use the correct terms when I address it, because I think a lot of people would have talked about it like it's George Floyd on trial, and it was Derek Chauvin on trial, and there's a lot of, I think, sensitive issues around how people are feeling right now, and the reaction to the verdict of him being found guilty of murder, of a police officer being found guilty of murder, which I'm 44, and I want to say that it's a first in my lifetime, unprecedented for me to even see that he was found guilty. I think many of us were skeptical that would be even, you know, that would even be the outcome, that it was even like kind of a state of shock. Even when the verdict came out, everyone was frozen still, for many different reasons. One, like I said, was the pure shock, because you were kind of in disbelief. You kind of set your feelings up to be prepared to get hurt or be prepared to hear the verdict that he's going to be let off or that he was going to be found innocent, because that's just what we're used to. And so there was an element of, you know, just disbelief that was actually going to be the outcome and that was actually going to be the verdict. Then the other side of it was that how much effort and energy it took to get one moment of awareness, to get this one moment of justice that I think has resonated for so many people, because it's tied to so many of the other names of people that didn't get justice, and all of the names of the hashtags that, you know, that need to continue to be amplified. You know, when people say her name or say his name, so the memory and the stories and of each of these victims is not lost and forgotten, because each one of them has their own unique narrative and story and tale of when they got pulled over and how it ended in their death, right? And so what it took, the amount of energy that it took entire world, it took the entire Minneapolis Police Department kind of crossing the blue line, as they say. It took boycotts from every major league sport. It took us watching on a daily basis a video of a man kneeling on a man's neck for what we now know is closer to 9 minutes. It took evidence. It took people, like, it literally took a year and a half worth of video, marching, protesting, and it still almost wasn't enough. As you know, it took, you know, exemplary effort from the attorney Ben Crump and the team that he assembled, and the team that was assembled around George Floyd's family. They handled the case utmost professionalism. Anyone that was, you know, if anybody out there watched the trial, you know, even every witness, it wasn't rehearsed. It was just like with intent. Even the officers were carrying the intent of like, we are all not going to go down for the murder that this person committed, right? And I think that all police everywhere, you know, whether, you know, I don't know what side of it you may be on personally, but we do, I think it's really a good and evil situation. And when we, you know, we'll talk about it later in the show when we're talking about the use of force, how much force is too much and how much isn't. But I don't, there's not much explaining what is just plain to see on video. And that's what seemed to be the other side of it, is that part of the explanation for what happened to George Floyd was that it was his own fault, right? That, well, he forged a $20 bill. Well, he was high on drugs. Or both of those things are true, right? That there was a call because of a possible bill that had been forged or that may have been faulty. He also was known to be having challenges with drugs in his life and substance abuse. It was known. Was he guilty of those things? Yes. Are those offenses punishable by death? At the site of the crime, or at the site of the alleged crime, by the officers that arrive onto the scene, is a judge, jury, executioner? Can I, you know, for us to see that and watch it, you know, I would be lying if I would say that there's probably not a little bit of PTSD amongst the African-American community and people on the outside of it looking in, trying to make sense of it. Because how many times have you seen this video now? How many times do we turn on the TV and right after that one, which is also part of our response, since George Floyd, since the verdict, how many more deaths have we watched on TV? Right? Dante Wright, Michaela Bryant, dare I say there'll be another name. There's the name of a gentleman from North Carolina that escapes me at this moment, from Elizabeth City. Which is ongoing right now as I record this. But it was that air and that element of that energy of like, well, they found Derek Chauvin guilty, but it's bigger than that. It's not just one bad apple. It's an energy. It's a sentiment. It's the way that this thing go. It may be not necessarily everywhere all the time, but a lot of places, enough of the time. And God bless technology that it's now opening America's eyes to see it, to be aware of it. And I know many people that are old school and people that will look at the energy that you put out and then what you bring on yourself, right? And well, if they were just compliant, or if they weren't doing anything, they wouldn't have nothing to worry about. I want to touch on that and talk about that when we come back, because, you know, I think that we can have a serious dialogue and debunk some of those theories about what we're actually talking about. We're trying to get to the root of the problem of why Black people keep ending up dead in these police interactions. Right? I'm not here to say all Black people are innocent of everything. We're not here to say any of that, that there's not a crime being committed or that there's not some form of whatever. It's that why, whenever the interaction happens, that a Black man or woman ends up dead. So we're going to touch on that. Excuse the tone. You know, we want to keep it light. And at the same time, we're talking about something serious, and I want to have this conversation with y'all right here. So I appreciate it. Come right back. This is Kevin Kazi Thomas right here on Inside Voices on 97.9 The Hill.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. This is your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening right here on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. We're continuing our conversation around the Derek Chauvin verdict and, you know, what this means for the legacy of justice for the family of George Floyd and how that has resonated through the world and the other cases and the other names and the other families of those that have yet to see justice in their cases. It's a defining moment in our nation right now. A lot of different emotions is what we've been talking about, you know, just in the earlier part of the show. You know, because like I said, at the same time, it's this huge victory. It's a reminder to many of how much work is still left to be done. Because not even a day or two later, we see three more incidents of, you know, black men and women dying at the hands of police. And the circumstances, and, you know, and I want to get into that in this segment, in this case, and this part of the show, the circumstances. And we will talk about the circumstances involved, right? Because we always say, like, let's wait, let's vet, let's let all of the evidence come out. We haven't seen the tape. Let's find out all of the details. Something happened. Something went on. There's more to it than that. They didn't just show up and just shoot the guy. He was doing something, right? And the sociology in me, you know, define, you know, that's a term, cognitive dissonance. You know, when you already have your mind made up about an element of something before you even receive the facts in a story because it lines up with your belief, right? I don't want to believe that police would do something like this to somebody. So he did something. Tell me what he did. Dig into his background. Give me some element of what he was doing. See, look at him in this picture. I knew there was something there. And I think that this is what a lot of black men and women's families face and what the legacy of these people that are dying faces. When they're in these interactions, they end up murdered. They end up dead. And then it becomes a retroactive investigation into their past to see what type of person they were. Did their life warrant this type of death? Did George Floyd's struggle with substance abuse warrant him being, you know, choked out? Or he asked, you know, because he tried to counterfeit a 20, he asked for it because he got into, you know, a struggle with the police while cuffed, that warranted the escalation to the next level. And this is why I asked this. And this is why many black men and women asked this and many allies asked this question, because you say that, well, if you comply, if you don't struggle, if you just do what you're supposed to, if you just follow the commands and the orders, that you'll come out of it okay. So that, you know, you won't bring it on yourself, right? So multiple things can be true. My father, you know, rest in peace, taught me that, like, you don't ever want to give a cop a reason. You know, you don't ever want to give a law enforcement officer, a person, or a reason that to escalate to the next level of what they're authorized to do, because it'll be just this. You'll be dead and we'll be talking about it retroactively. And they'll just be trying to prove whether you're right or wrong and you'll be dead. Right? And so the element of self-preservation that black men and women are taught is that you don't want the back and forth. You don't want the altercation, right? That's not going to turn out well for you. But what the flip side of me as an American is, like, what's granted, what's warranted when we're talking about the use of force. Dylan Roof, I don't even like saying his name, killed, what, 8-9 people in a church walks out, goes to Burger King. Buddy shoots up the Aurora movie theater, the Batman movie, kills 16 people, comes out alive. Dude that just shot up the it escapes me right now. There was another mass shooting 2 weeks ago. The guy comes out alive. It's the use of force. When we're talking about the use of force and the respect that is given to white assailants or assailants that are non people of color, and then what is afforded to a black person in that moment. And we've seen it time and time again that a mass shooter, a violent offender, can get into a back and forth with police and live to tell about it if they're not black. I'm just going to be real. And that's what a lot of people are calling foul on. That's what people with eyeballs that are looking at this for what it is and taking the blue off of it, taking the flag off of it, taking the whatever bias or racism you have off of it, and just look at it with your eyes. If that was a knee on a dog's neck for 9 minutes, what would warrant that? What warrants that even you're trying to pull off from me in a car that I won't tase you, I'm going to kill you? What warrants that if you're selling cigarettes in front of a gas station, I'm going to choke you out till you die? What warrants that you're selling CDs in front of a gas station, so I'm going to shoot you? You're trying to get in your car and get away, so I'm going to shoot and kill you. The use of force, right? That when I see a black perpetrator like Elijah McClain, that I'm going to choke you out. And then that's okay. Because retroactively, we'll find the worst picture of you that we can find on Facebook and post that and tell the worst story about you that there is to tell. And your family will be left to try to clean that up and pick that piece up for you and, you know, vindicate you from all that retroactively from beyond the grave. And that's what the reality of the brief celebration or the brief moment of like excitement around this verdict. Like, it happened, but is it real? Is it something that is going to become the new norm? Is this really going to be a thing? Is this, what's the reaction gonna be now that justice has, you know, been served? Like, we saw the reaction of black people voting in Georgia. Now it's against the law to hand people water and food and standing in line. So what, you know, there's a George Floyd bill that is making its way onto the legislature about accountability and policing, justice and fairness and policing. How will this move forward? There are two other cases in Minnesota right now of people being murdered by the police. How will they move forward? So that's the cause for like the hesitation and celebration, because it's like it's just very much very still a shaky boat, a shaky bridge. And at the same time, I want to put some respect on this moment because, you know, it is a possible, and I would say very clear, turning point in history if we decide finally once and for all that black death is not okay. At the hands of police, at the hands of each other. I really hope that this is part of the energy of this turning point in this moment. But just the use of force, it's that we always end up shot and dead when someone else will do a mass murder and come out alive and handcuffed. Can black men and women be afforded the same leeway and respect for humanity? You know, I was talking to my mom about it. She, old school country, you know, shouts out to anybody from the country, you know, it's Richlands, North Carolina. And, You know, I was talking to her yesterday and we were talking about it, you know, because she's 86. So she's seen it a lot of different times, a lot of different ways. She's seen it hanging from a tree. She's seen it pulled over down a dirt road, back road, and that story get made up to go a certain way. And now we're here in 2021, and now we're just watching it on cell phone video, but still it's like you've seen it go a bunch of different ways, right? In her 86 years. And my mom, my stepmother, this is what I say my mother, went to a segregated school. So she's part of the generation that went to segregated schools that's still here and alive and can tell you about drinking out of colored fountains, riding different buses and things like that. So certain things don't surprise her when she sees them. And it's kind of not jaded me, but just always kept me aware about the reality of how things were and how they are and the undercurrent of how they could be. Unless we pull the veil back on these things. And so we were making this, you know, comparison. She was talking about it. She was like, you know, Kevin, it's not much different than when we out here in the field and somebody sees a snake, or how you're raised when you see a snake. And she's like, the reaction, when you see a snake, what's the reaction? Go get the hoe or go get the shotgun? Because we got to kill it. And, you know, it's a comparison of energy. It's not the same, but if you understand what I'm saying, is like the mentality of what has been the response to blackness in our country as far back as you want to go. You know, and I think that if we want to strip it down from the roots all the way back to the ideal of like when they see us, when officers and when police see us, how they are trained to see us and how they are trained to deal with us and the amount of force that is necessary to stop a big 6'4" whatever beast or whatever is being put into that chamber of fear in a person's mind when they see an African-American male or female in a threatening situation that I have to kill them. So it's a question mark for many of us why we always end up dead and the mass shooters always end up walking out handcuffed and getting Burger King. So we'll take another break right now and I'll come back and talk about justice and accountability, and put some more respect on the name of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and everybody that lost their life on the struggle. Appreciate everybody checking in. This is Kevin Kazi Thomas, listening to Inside Voices on 97.9 The Hill. Be right back.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And we're back. This is Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're still listening right here to Inside Voices on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. We're continuing our conversation around the Derek Chauvin trial and verdict and justice for George Floyd and his family and, what this means for our world, our nation. Is this a turning point for justice and accountability for when police murder black men and women? Now, I'd say, you know, now this is, and let's start right here, right? Shouts out to all the good, hardworking police men and women that get up and do their job every single day. When anyone in any one of their jobs does something wrong, they're held accountable. I don't care if you make pizza. I don't care if you make coffee, you pour water. Everyone has somebody that they're held accountable by, a boss, a standard, a code of ethics. And it's what we're talking about here is when we watch something on tape like what we just saw. For 9 minutes, a person kneels on somebody's neck or someone shoots, kills an unarmed person in the car with their spouse and child, or comes into their living room and kills them unarmed, or shoots them, you know, Botham John, I can start naming out the names. These are all real cases that I'm speaking on, or shoots them in a park with their toy gun, Tamir Rice. Like I said, shoots them in a car with their permit, with their weapon, like Philando Castile. You know, what happens to these officers when the family and the evidence and even in this case, right? Why do we know about it? Why were we ever made aware? Because a young woman was brave enough to record it on her cell phone while she was being threatened with police action for even videotaping something that her heart and her gut was telling her was wrong, right? That, you know, I think back to eighth grade when I woke up and saw the Rodney King video. It was the first time I had seen with my eyes something like that. Like a blatant just beat down. And I was like, to be sure, these cops are guilty. They're breaking the law. They're not enforcing the law. They are breaking the law themselves. They're taking the law into their own hands. And because they think nobody's looking, they're doing exactly whatever they want to do. And they know no one's going to care because it's just another black thug, criminal, whatever hyphenated stereotype you want to put on it. And that's the way the story will be told and sold, and we'll move on. And video is providing transparency now. And then when we want to provide transparency, we want to know details. We want accountability. If you killed this person, we want to know why. And if you did it in a fashion that was racist, biased, with an intent to murder, with that intent, because you felt it necessary, not because you were performing your job or your task, then should not you be held accountable, not only by, like, first your peers, your superiors, your peers, which is what we started to see in Minnesota, which was unprecedented. Other cops saying, nah, he's not a cop like me. I would never. That's not how we're taught. That's not how we wear our badge. That's not the flag we represent. That's not how we protect and serve. Get this guy out of here. He's making me look bad. Was the energy that was present on the stand for the very first time in American history. That it's not patriotic for me to cover for you being a racist, murderous, murdering bigot. That's not the blue line that I'm protecting. That's not a way to protect you. That's making me look bad. If I stick up for that, if I don't say nothing about that, I'm compliant to it. And it ain't that easy. No, it is that easy. It is that simple. For the same fact that you will not see a white kid with a knee on his neck for 9 minutes. You won't. You won't see a dog with a knee on his neck for 9 minutes. So the level that it took to gain accountability, it took a secret video from a phone, worldwide marching. So we want to know what's the standard moving forward, because to get accountability for a black person murdered right now is to march, damn near riot, boycott, protest, have every athlete, entertainer, social media icon come to the town and shut it down. And then maybe they consider doing an internal investigation. Lord forbid it's grand jury. You may not even know what went on in the case. If you're in the state of North Carolina, body cam transparency, there's an asterisk there because you have to make an appeal for that to the court to even get that footage. And the judge is going to decide whether or not you can have it or not. And so we're talking about accountability. Where does it start? Where is it? Where do police, when you go kill somebody and that's not part of your job. That was not part of that man's job. Like I said, was he Was he guilty of being on drugs? Yes. Did the drugs kill him that day? You know? And so when we see these things, and then when you see a cop get off from it, and then it was your relative, your loved one, your aunt, your uncle, or you look in the mirror and it's a person that looks like just like you, or your brother or your loved one. That's deep. That cuts deep, man. To tell someone they didn't see what they thought you saw over and over and over again. And that it is always the person that ends up dead's fault every single time is just something that I think continued, like, that energy is part of what we got to cut through with this accountability. It's not always, not every time. It's more that energy. Like, I think when people jump out and they see a snake. So yeah, we need to do something about that. Absolutely. More accountability for when these things happen. And if, you know, and that's the thing, when you provide transparency, if you did what you were supposed to, that we're going to see that as well. Right. But the use of force, the gun comes out when it's us. The gun's coming out when it's us, to the point where it's like, don't even call the police. You know, in black community, it's like, that's going to escalate it. You know, I just saw a young man. There's a young man that died. I want to say South Carolina. A woman called the cops on him because she saw he had a gun. He got there. Cops saw he had a gun, shot him and killed him. The lady was like, I wish I never called the police. The guy that worked at Cup Foods that had the $20 bill that called said, I wish I never would have called the police. And this is like part of the conversation we have when we're talking about is law enforcement being asked to handle situations that another administrative body could possibly help in this case, right? That this, a lot of this is social work, mental health work, that law enforcement officers are being asked to do. And they're showing up on the scene of mental health situations in some instances, and other, like, you know, domestic disputes, and being asked to perform that duty. And a lot of times we're seeing these things go wrong, right? That was a fight that the Mekhi Bryant, there was a domestic fight going on there between some women and her and another dude, and it was getting scrappy. The cops show up and shoot the girl. Did that solve anything? Like, this is what we're talking about when, like, an escalation of something that's already, like, Sean Bell coming, like, on his bachelor party. He's getting married the next day. Gets in his car, undercovers think that he's doing something. They jump on the hood of his car and shoot him through the windshield. It's an escalation. Taking something that could be handled in, like, with proper training, with proper emotional and situational awareness, that could still be executed. Police work could still be executed. But that just jumping straight to taking out the gun and shooting is ending up with people dead, and then no explanation in their wake, and then no one held accountable except a suspension and a pension. And then officers go one town over, two towns over, and get another job. And that's the resentment that you're seeing come out in these, in a lot of what you're seeing in burning, this burning and being rioted, and the energy of anger and frustration is that this has been the cycle. This has been what the system, you say, when you say trust the system and trust the process, that this has been the history of what we've received. So just going to take a minute to get, you know, kind of like, okay, is this the new way? Let's make sure this is the new way. So we're going to keep working on this being the new way. We're going to take another break right now. Appreciate everybody checking in right now, talking about the Derek Chauvin trial, the guilty verdict, and putting respect on the memory of George Floyd. Thanks for listening. It's Kevin Kazi Thomas right here on the Inside Voices on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And we're back on Inside Voices. Your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas, and you're listening right here on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. Continuing conversation around social justice, racism, everything that we can do to make it better and just have a real talk, you know, with the people out here. Thanks for everybody listening in. Just wanted to share my thoughts. You know, we didn't even need a guest on. I just wanted to talk to y'all, you know, about this. And I hadn't really shared my thoughts and feelings about any of this since it's happened. And so I just wanted to make sure that we had that conversation here and kind of wrap up. Look, the energy of what is, I want to continue to put hope and progress out there, and love around the situation and optimism that this is a turning point, that this is a moment that accountability and justice and policing, as far as like the governance of what can protect us as Black men and women and people of color out here, indigenous people of color, whatever, however you identify, that, you know, our community, which I feel good about, is continuing to have these conversations in Chapel Hill as well as Durham. And we're going to have some of the sheriffs on and the shows in the future to talk about the issues that affect us locally. So we maintain our own transparency and continue to talk about these things the way that we need to. But, you know, I think that that's why it's important here, right, that we have our own conversations with our own people, because I feel safe here, and I want the energy and the air of that to continue to grow and resonate, and that maybe, you know, that our community can be an example, you know, that we can say, nah, it's different here. And I feel that, and I feel, you know, strongly about that we can say that about Chapel Hill and Durham as well, that it can be different here and that we want it to be different here and for it to be seen that way. And so, going to continue to put that energy out there to everybody out there that wants to see the same. And you know, the sad, like I said, the thing about it is everybody's like, yay, are we happy, can we move on? And the reality is, like I said, there's been several hashtags since then, and so there's still work to do, still awareness that we need to create around the system of policing. You know, when people are saying defund it, I know that is scaring a lot of people, like, get rid of the police, how can we? And, you know, not even all Black people feel the same about everything. You know, I think that a lot of what, when people say defund the police, terrorizes a lot of older generation or people that may listen to that, say like, they just want to get rid of the police. And I think as I dug deeper into it, what I became to understand more about it is, and I think even be a better, well, for me, what was a better interpretation was a reallocation of the way that our funds are distributed and budgeted, right? Is that how much money do we put into certain elements of law enforcement for the people, and how, what we're asking them to do, as opposed to what can be put into, so like, a social work or a department of a social worker that goes out and handles those cases, or, you know, the psychological or mental cases, or, you know, the different elements of what police work is, police are being asked to do, that is kind of outside of what they should being asked to do. And so maybe the money from some of that can go towards establishing things in the community that replace policing, right? That fill a void, that instead of showing up with something that could possibly escalate a situation, that it's more a attention to a need. Now I am truly protecting and serving you. I'm not showing up to incarcerate or to cause harm to a person that is possibly sick, whether that's mentally or physically, or in distress. And so it's a part of an element when we're talking about reallocating funds and rethinking or reimagining the way that things could work. And so I think that's a big part of what the conversation is around how people, you know, how we want to continue to see black people look at police and how we want to look at them. There has to be a conversation that has to start somewhere. And we're happy to have it here. And so, yeah, I look forward to in the future having on some of the police and sheriffs from Chapel Hill and Durham and surrounding areas right here on Inside Voices to continue talking about it. But until then, I want to just continue to, you know, say thanks to everybody for checking in on this conversation. Keep your head high, and we're going to be positive and continue to keep what we can do about it and spreading the positive energy about, you know, what we can do constructively to create progress, you know, and awareness. And so that's what we're doing here. And I thank y'all. You know, check the show out on chapelboro.com and back here every Sunday, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. It's your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. Thanks for listening to Inside Voices, and RIP and respect to the family of George Floyd. All right. See y'all back next week. Thanks.
You've been listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. Catch this episode and more by visiting our on-demand page at chapelboro.com. What you mean you don't know?